Narto yas cheha karmabhihi. Report by Srila Prabhupada. The completely bewildered material civilization is wrongly directed towards the fulfillment of desires in sense gratification. In such civilization, in all spheres of life, the ultimate end is sense gratification. In politics, social service, altruism, philanthropy, and ultimately in religion, or even in salvation, the very same tint of sense gratification is ever increasingly predominant. In the political field, the leaders of men fight with one another to fulfill their personal sense gratification. The voters adore the so-called leaders only when they promise sense gratification. As soon as the voters are dissatisfied in their own sense satisfaction, they dethrone the leaders. The leaders must always disappoint the voters by not satisfying their senses. The same is applicable in all other fields. No one is serious about the problems of life. Even those who are on the path of salvation desire to become one with the absolute truth and desire to commit spiritual suicide for sense gratification. But the Bhagavatam says that one should not live for sense gratification. One should satisfy the senses only in so much as required for self-preservation and not for sense gratification. Because the body is made of senses, which also require a certain amount of satisfaction, there are regulative directions for satisfaction of such senses. But the senses are not meant for unrestricted enjoyment. For example, marriage or the combination of a man and a woman is necessary for progeny, but it is not meant for sense enjoyment. In the absence of voluntary restraint, there is propaganda for family planning. But foolish men do not know that family planning is automatically executed as soon as there is search after the absolute truth. Seekers of the absolute truth are never allured by unnecessary engagements in sense gratification, because the serious students seeking the absolute truth are always overwhelmed with the work of researching the truth in every sphere of life. Therefore, the ultimate end must be seeking after the absolute truth. And that sort of engagement will make one happy, because he'll be less engaged in varieties of sense gratification. And what that absolute truth is explained as follows. That's the Vedanta Tattva Vedas verse. From Eti Paramatma Eti Bhagavan Eti Shabhite. Well, its purport is repetitious to make clear understanding. Not this, but that. And the involvement of the senses is to facilitate pursuit of the absolute truth. This is very specific as far as sense gratification is concerned. Indriya priti, satisfying the senses. The previous two verses were focusing on the duties of life, dharma, and the fruits of the performance of those duties. The end should not be sense gratification. the end should be for elevation, taking up those activities in the proper way so that one can become elevated. And if one does so, there's piety that's accrued, and so then there's fruits of piety. Those fruits of piety shouldn't be employed in sense gratification. They should be employed in service to the Supreme. So this is now the desire that's behind those activities. Kama, kamasya, na, indriya priti. So that there's the prohibition. Desire should not be directed towards sense gratification. Jivaita, this is where, this is the word that Prabhupada has brought the meaning self-preservation or healthy life. Jivaita, yavata, only yavata, so much so, to the extent that elsewhere it uses the phrase keeping body and soul together. Basically, it's just so that the instrument, the body, is fit for this human purpose, higher purpose, pursuing the absolute truth. Not to be neglected, it's not to be indulged in. And so that means even those things that are beneficial for keeping how to make this contrast proper. Not for bodybuilding or, you know, for the health orientation, for health's sake, so I feel better, kind of. And there's nothing, that byproduct of feeling better will be there if one has got a higher purpose. The message is the higher purpose is what's wanted. Something that provides suitable amount of exercise to keep the body fit so it doesn't deteriorate and just become a big problem. Expensive, time taking, and so on. So, jivaita yavata. Lava jivaita. Yavata, the attainment of that proper balance for the purpose of jivasya tattva jigyasa, so the inquisitiveness into the absolute truth, that doesn't just mean sitting and studying books and pondering with one's intellect. It means the whole of life directed towards pursuing the absolute truth. The process, in general, the processes of yoga are linking with the absolute truth. So, bhakti yoga is comprehensive. It's holistic. It's everything that one does. Like we were speaking last night, not secular, this is for God and that's for everything else. This message is that everything is for God, including those things that preserve us and keep us healthy. It shouldn't be done inordinately, and it shouldn't be done neglectfully. It should be done mindfully for that purpose, not less than that purpose and that beyond that purpose. The purport makes it very clear what the danger zone is. The danger zone is sense gratification. People that do that for the sake of itself, health for health's sake and knowledge for knowledge's sake, and the absence of God consciousness results in doing things for sense gratification. As Prabhupada is pointing out here, even the religionists, even the salvationists, it's my self-interest. It's selfish-centered, not God-centered. So connecting with the Absolute Truth through devotion, even in matters that pertain to sense satisfaction. In the political correctness of modern Western society, these questions are very sensitive, these topics are very sensitive. Of course, many people are just dull, but people that are kind of on the cutting edge of political correctness, the repression is bad, and excess is, you know, their idea of balance that's healthy and wholesome has no spiritual context to it. And as soon as you bring in spiritual context, it means restriction, and people know that. I was having a discussion with one young American fellow who's in his degree path, and he's looking at Krishna consciousness, and from the perspective of a modern educated Western young man, he's attracted to Krishna consciousness, but it doesn't resonate completely with the intellectual political correctness of today. The inherent understanding is there's restrictions. And that's what religion means. Codes where it's just like, you know, there's restrictions on the highway. You don't drive in any side of the road, and you drive at any speed you like, and you don't pass through intersections any way you like. There's restrictions because it makes for safety. So with codes of religion, there's restrictions, and it's not the intellectually popular view at the time imposition. It's a standard, a principle of reducing and regulating sense activities and directing even those regulated sense activities towards a goal. And that imposition of some standard like that, it's just doesn't have a place in political correctness, intellectual political correctness. I'll govern myself how I see fit. And I don't, some restriction is good, but, you know, what is the basis of that restriction? I'll decide. This fundamental problem of a godless society has many different manifestations. You bring in, it's not just Vedic culture, certainly within Vedic culture, but outside of Vedic culture or other religions, they have their restrictions. And very explicit here is these restrictions are to achieve a God-given purpose. That's the goal of life. Voluntarily I accept these restrictions because they help me reach the goal of life. Not just because they're being a law-abiding citizen is good. You obey the laws. You don't break the laws. The Bhagavatam is speaking about more than that. There's injunctions and prohibitions, and one follows them. That's a religious person. The Bhagavatam is speaking of a higher platform. The Bhagavatam is speaking like, you know, love of country, patriotism for the beyond just being a good citizen, being in the material sense. So in the spiritual sense, it's directed towards this relationship with the Supreme, and trying to strengthen that relationship with Krishna by directing all my activities and restraining activities for the connection with the Supreme purpose, not for the sense gratification purpose. So when I'm living that life in devotion, yes, there's eating. My Prabhupada says, we don't say no eating, we don't say no sex, we don't say no sleeping, we don't say abnegation. We say with restriction for the satisfaction of Krishna. Same thing in other ways. Everything created by God has a purpose. And if we use things according to that purpose, we have a good situation. And if we don't use things according to that purpose, that's the sense gratification position. I use things because it satisfies me, not because it satisfies a purpose. A God-given purpose. Discussion in Western society very quickly goes, or if it doesn't quickly go, it will eventually go. Or the unspoken part is sex between man and woman. So there's a God-given purpose of gender. The God-given purpose of gender is it's necessary for progeny. So for the purpose of propagating God-conscious children, that's the purpose and not otherwise. That's the use, and that's the restriction. And of course there's lots of other ideas floating around, what the purpose is, and restriction means repression, and means frustration, all kinds of other stuff. The message that Prabhupada makes very clear is that this whole misdirected life of sense gratification is checked and realigned. If there's the spirit of inquisitiveness of the absolute truth, it just follows for a religious person. They're not all over the place with their senses. Jivasya tatva jigyasa. Narto yas cheha karmabhihi. And so full swing, it goes back to occupational activities. Nothing else should be the goal of one's works. Works, again, indicating in the occupational field or in the realm of religious activity, because secular view separates the two. Vedic view doesn't separate the two, so there's one. Occupational activity is not just what my job is, but it's what my duties of life are, the whole picture of duties of life. Nothing else should be the goal of one's life, to bring oneself closer to the absolute truth. Make my mind and my intelligence more clear and sharp and focused, something that will help me approach the absolute truth, that I need to control my senses, okay. There's discipline. An atheist doesn't want imposed from outside disciplines, self-discipline, because I want, I decide, and I discipline myself. That's one of the core issues for Western people, this spirit of independence. Even people that consider themselves to be theistic, there's a spirit of independence. It's very, very strong. And that spirit of independence certainly makes its way into the field of sense gratification. I'm going to decide how I want my senses satisfied. What's the standard? What's the method? What falls in the category of sense gratification? What doesn't? These are nice verses. Very practical. Kamashanendriya Pritir Labho Jiveta Yavata Jivashitta Jingyasa Narto Yascheha Karma Vihi. Life's desire is plural. Life's desires should never be directed towards sense gratification. One should only desire a healthy life or self-preservation. Since a human being is meant for inquiry about the absolute truth, nothing else should be the goal of one's works. Labho jiveta yavata. You put this verse together with the others from Savai Pungsum Paro Dharmo Yato Mukti Yato Sajay. It's a great package. Discussion?
Having a conversation with someone at work, older lady, 50s maybe. So she knows I'm Hare Krishna, and we've had conversations in the past. And she walked in off and she started speaking about something. She said, "I want to ask you about, I don't know what exactly the conversation was. What was the conversation started with that?" She starts talking about, "Oh, why do you think this? Why did you do this?" And I was explaining to you. Sharing with her some of Krishna conscious philosophies, and she was liking it, and she said, "Oh, it's nice." And then, "Oh, women, asked about women.
Big issue.
Sorry?
It's a big issue.
Yeah, what about women? And so I tried to very delicately handle it. But quickly went downstream from there. This was about women taking sannyasa, so that's what she was talking about. She asked me about the whole sannyasa ashram. Why don't women take sannyasa? And so when I said something like women
are to be protected.
Are to be protected. Why?
Shh. I had that same conversation yet, not on sannyasa specifically. But that depending upon the education and social awareness level of the individual, they can understand from different perspective. I presented in the same kind of discussion yesterday, presented two things. That which you value, you protect. Gave the example of some, you know, heirlooms within the family. That's not so common in America, but it's in traditional families, there are some very valuable things. And when you receive that very valuable thing, you protect it. It's the treasure. It's that which brings, sustain, even when everything else goes crazy. That's something that the family has that's of value and worth. You protect it. And Vedic culture says women are that wellspring of value for society. As in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna doesn't want to involve himself in the battle because he sees that women who are to be protected may be unprotected. And because they're always aggressive men, they may violate those women and produce unwanted children. It's a ruination of society, so I don't want to do that. Protection of that valuable. So protection in that sense. Women are to be protected in that way. Or would that be in mind because of their great value? Just like children are to be protected, they're the future of the society. They're to be protected. And they're easily violated. Because they're like the cow. The cow doesn't have claws and teeth. The cow is to be protected. But it's not just because it's poor and defenseless, because it's extremely valuable. Cow is like the mother, so we protect her mother, because, you know, she's a mother. In that sense, and you take away that sense of protection of that which is the wellspring of good progeny and good value within society, what do you have? You have America. You have, you know, this a society where it's chaos. You go this extreme or that extreme, you've got a problem. So you don't go in unreasonable extremes, but protection must be there. And then, and the role of this idea of sannyas, a woman can be as renounced as a man, no problem, in any position, and there's many examples. But the form of it, looks different because of this sense of value, not to like the thing that the heirloom you keep within the safe place in your house. You don't put it on the post of the front gate. So a woman's form of renunciation is like this, and a man's form of renunciation is like that. He has a certain duty within society. A woman can perform a very similar duty, just her role, the form, is different. We have plenty of persons within our organization, women that are very renounced. And the form of their renunciation is appropriate for the culture of protection and preservation of that which is extremely valuable. So, from a social or sociological perspective, some persons get it and some persons just get stuck on something else. They get stuck on the form. Kind of equal.
She was saying that it was a pretty interesting conversation, because she went on to say one pursues a spiritual life because you have that wanting to search for happiness, but I feel happiness when I go to my symphony or orchestra and I play my instrument. So that gives me happiness, and I've got my orchestra tomorrow night, and then she went on to say, so many, you know, I don't follow anything, and I'm not part of anyone, and I have my own philosophy, and I can accept it.
Yeah, this is the political correctness position. I have no authority. I am. It's this spirit of independence. It's something that resonates very well with all of that is Buddhism for those people. There's no God. There's no soul. It's just, you know, ethics, nonviolence, gentle, good, truth. Buddhism is becoming very popular. And so, you know, what you, for somebody like that, you can't give them a higher taste, but you can give them a frame of reference. The frame of reference is, as far as the Vedic picture of things is concerned, what you're doing is certainly above sense gratification, because it's, you know, of a gross sense, unrestricted, unrefined sense gratification. It's on the next platform, the consciousness. Poetry, music, literature, you know, refinements of cultural presentation. To either directly participate like you're doing, or to experience those who are very proficient. And it's another level of the intelligence. Above that is the intellectual plane. The Platos and Socrateses of the world, and they live in that realm of ideas. Very abstract and, you know, detached even from the poetry and music and art, and certainly detached from gross sense gratification. Another, but the Vedic pictures above that is the platform of the soul. Directly being enlightened. But what is this driving energy, vital energy, and that vital energy's connection with the Supreme Soul, as the knower of all souls, and the knower of all bodies, and the knower of all minds, and the knower of all intellects simultaneously. You know, it's orchestrating the whole thing. And brings it into being and winds it up. Being conscious on that platform. That happiness, when experienced, doesn't mean there's no poetry, and there's no music, but it's done in relation to the Supreme, and that happiness, once experienced, one never wants to leave it. And, you know, like you don't want to go into unregulated, you're giving your own positions and restrictions because you're finding some happiness. There's another, and there's another level. Right? And that's just a Vedic picture. And you know, it's nice that you're an open-minded person. You can, although you're leading your life in a certain way, you're curious about other things. It's, you know.
I had a question in continuation with my question yesterday about chanting. I understand about specific services that come to mind, but what if just general, you know, wanting to be engaged in service, just those type of thoughts, are those also to be withdrawn from and purely the focus has to be on the sound vibration?
That's ideal. The way to address this to your, so that you're satisfied, just imagine that you had such control of your mind that you could direct it wherever you wanted to. And when it's time for chanting, it's time for chanting and hearing. And when it's time for service, it's time for service. And if you're so connected with Krishna when you're chanting, when it's time for service, you'll be connected with Krishna with your service. And Krishna will give you, as I described yesterday, the intelligence, the remembrance, and, you know, the details of how to carry forward with that service. So you just trust that Krishna will direct you in your service. And when it's time for service, your mind isn't somewhere else. It's on your service. You know, it for Krishna. You're not thinking about how well did I... You're thinking about your service. You're very focused. So when chanting, your service is chanting. Here. Holy name. So if some thought comes into the mind about service, that means the service that's going to come later or came before, not what you're doing right now. What you're doing right now is chanting, you're hearing. So that's an intrusion. You're going to be focused upon hearing the holy name, or you're going to be focused on the service, but you can't be focused on hearing the holy name and focused on the service. So, this is something that I know that I need to attend to. So I just, you know, Krishna, I trust in Krishna, but the thought keeps it. And then let that thought go away. And when you're done with your chanting, you put your feet back down. Now you're focused on Krishna and His holy name. Now here's some item of service. I know there's other some regulated things that I must do. Here's some special thing I know I need to do, or a thought of how to do that thing I know I need to do. And then you give focus to that. So if you don't have that mental discipline or service discipline, because the service is chanting and hearing. And if you cultivate that, and you'll find the pattern will flow like that. When it's chanting, it's chanting. When it's service, it's service. When you're very focused. When you're very focused doing service, you know, inspiration comes, execution comes, it's done. A very compact quantum of energy and time. And then next service, okay, now. And that, that opulence of focused attention is assisted by proper chanting. Because otherwise you can be doing a service and your mind is distracted by the other services. Same thing. And you're not being attentive and, you know, whatever happens, you burn the something or you don't attend to a detail. And you're only deceiving yourself. And then, you know, there may be downstream consequences of not being focused on what you were supposed to be doing. I'll assume that you're asking the question out of what's the right approach. Now, but here's, you didn't ask it, what one thing not to do is, before you're at that stage of discipline, don't beat yourself up because, you know, I'm not doing it the way that I was told to do it. It's something that you cultivate. And consistently, persistently cultivate. The goal is that when I'm chanting, there's nothing else in the three worlds that's meaningful to me but associating with Krishna through His holy name. Because you're associating with Krishna in the spiritual world by that. Then in turn, when I'm carrying out my services, I'm completely present with Krishna as an expression. The service itself is an expression of that connection with Krishna. That's where I want to be. So I'm making choices now so I can get there. Anything else?
I just prefer to exercise. What would be some practical recommendation you could give us? Because I used to exercise, but I stopped. In other words, I used to play badminton once a week. That could somehow disintegrate it and I don't do anything. But I was wondering if you would recommend that we do something besides Sunday jumping.
Yeah. I'm not a good one. I've been neglectful in this myself. So I'm not an acharya in this matter. But something that's on the Vedic side and something that's on the practical side, a sannyasi, there's two sannyasis that I know do this in a very conscientious manner. One is Devamrita Swami, another is Prahladananda Swami. Devamrita Swami's advocacy is swimming is the best. Because it's aerobic, There's no resistance. You just, you know, it's in its whole body. And it's something that you can do. And it doesn't take a lot of time. You know, for he's busy sannyasi, he was the chairman of our DBC last year. But 3 days of the week for 45 minutes from the time you leave the door to the time you come back. And he even went to the extent that he got a trainer to learn certain strokes that would be that best for his body. He had very bad condition. He had an asthma condition. Just, you know, had, he was sick, sickly kind of person. Now he's, you know, robust. As I saw him in Mayapur, sitting in his room with his shirt off, and you know, but his stature was previously quite different. He's very healthy. Because he's healthy, he can energetically do his service better. I'm better to refer to such an example. And alternatively, if I was whining and complaining, saying, you know, I travel so much. I said, I travel so much. I'm here in America. But if you're not traveling so much, you're just in some place. One of the problems would be to go at a time when it's not just a mob of people. You know, for me, it's easy because I can go to a place when people are off at work. So, I don't know how to answer that question, but that's one possibility. Another is yoga, and along with something that's aerobic, or your lungs. Something that Dave Amitomaras' recommendation decided to do is, in New York and in Chicago now, I have a little rebounder, like a mini trampoline. And, you know, it doesn't take long. And you can listen to something while you're doing it. You just bounce. And it's a whole body thing. Maharaj's point was, it's not the floor, it's a hard surface. It doesn't shock, you know, people that do workout. Over a period of time, it deteriorates the body. But this is something better at swimming, and this is balanced, and it's aerobic, and it's your whole body. So one of those three things, or combination.
Oh, biking, man?
Biking is also good, so that's aerobic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ranjan Maharaj was doing that. He was, you know, encouraging others. Because I'm like running, and over time it has the effect on the body. And biking doesn't. And it doesn't take me. He had a really bad blood pressure problem. Really high. So he had to do something. As soon as he took, you know, biking is such that if your blood pressure is low, your blood pressure is high. It brings it to a normal position. And it's good exercise. There's a fourth thing. Okay.